This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Ever since Detroit made history by being the largest American city to fall into and then work its way out of bankruptcy, writers and reporters have been weighing in with their take on Detroit's story. At the same time, people who feel drawn to a comeback story are moving to Detroit. They bring their narrative and point of view to what Detroit's about. The trouble is, these narratives and views of Detroit are coming from outsiders, like journalists who whip in, write about a specific area, usually the more decaying, the better, and then they head off. Writer and Detroiter Aaron Foley decided it's time to give the visitors and the newcomers a dose of Detroit realism. The title of his new book pretty much says it all, How to Live in Detroit Without Being a Jackass. Aaron, welcome to the program. Good to have you back on.
Thanks for having me again, Cynthia.
You make a really great point, Aaron, in the opening of your book, and you say it seems sometimes like Detroit's newer residents are all too quick to say good riddance to things that are sentimental to old-timers. And you have very, very deep roots. Aren't you fourth generation Detroit?
Yes, fourth generation.
So you've watched this happen. I'm wondering what pushed your button enough that you felt, okay, I got to write this book.
You know, I think it's really like a 20, 30-something mindset the more I approach this. It's everybody wants to say, leave the past in the past, leave the history, you know, history is history, and let's just look forward. But I think Detroit is unique, and not just Detroit, lots of cities like Detroit. Mm-hmm. Detroit is unique in the fact where you have to look back to the history of Detroit to connect the dots to where we are now, like why the city is what it is, why we ended up in bankruptcy in the first place, and you can't ignore that.
And you're seeing that happen all too often.
All too often. Everyone's like, Detroit's a blank canvas. You know, nobody was here. We're here to fix Detroit. We're here to save Detroit. And, you know, there's thousands of people who would raise their hand and say, no, we are here. We've been trying to fix Detroit as well. You know, why aren't we working together? Why are you ignoring us?
Yeah, you do share a lot of good, I'll call it basic information with names to be familiar with and popular events broken down very helpfully by season, Detroit neighborhoods, car lore, classic Detroit foods from Better Made Chips to Verner's and more. That's the easy stuff. But you squarely tackle some very nuanced and important issues. And one of your chapters is how you should be talking about Detroit. Really important for journalists or for people who are moving into Detroit from anywhere else. So what do you think are the main do's and the main don'ts with how you should be talking about Detroit?
I think one of the main do's is what I said earlier, is not treating the city as if no one had lived here before, because, one, there are people living here. And I think, two, because Detroit's demographics as they are, it's a majority black population, when you say that, oh, there was no one here, no one's taking care of the place, it's just empty, it's erasure. You know, it's erasure in an entire culture, an entire mm-hmm. population. And that can be damaging as far as the way, you know, not just here in Detroit, but how black residents are seen across the country. I think some of the do's, you know, as far as how you should be talking about Detroit is, you know, be respectful of the culture. I don't want to say it's easy, but I do want to say that basic manners like saying hi and hello to people, treating your neighbor with kindness and respect, you know, not isolating yourselves from the people that you live with, live next door to and whatnot. I mean, that can go a long way.
You have a chapter called How Not to Offend People When Talking About Detroit with a really interesting list of landmines, phrases that will do exactly that. I'm going to give you a few and you can spell out for us just kind of what's wrong with them and what might be said that would be better. For instance, what Detroit really needs right now is...
Okay, so people always say Detroit needs a Chipotle. Detroit needs this one magic thing that can make things better. But when you say things like that, that's just saying, how can I make my life easier? You know, and when you say, like, all Detroit needs is this one thing, you know, it doesn't erase, like, racism, and it doesn't erase poverty and unemployment and all these other issues that we're dealing with. So, and when you say Detroit needs a Chipotle, can that really help Detroit the way you think it's going to help?
And probably kind of a corollary that, can blank save Detroit? That's a big one we hear.
That's a big one because it paints this impression that Detroit is just this damsel in distress, you know, waiting for the white knight to come, you know, figural and literal, because a lot of newer residents tend to be younger and white, and mm-hmm. they say, I can save Detroit if I just do this. And, you know, we're not sitting here waiting to be saved.
Our shared challenges, struggles, heartbreaks.
That's the one where I think, you know, people come to Detroit and they automatically think everyone is in suffering and in despair. And that's not to say that people aren't. That we definitely have some challenges in Detroit. But why, you know, why do you have to start off on that foot? Can't we start off on something maybe a little more positive?
I'm talking with writer Aaron Foley, and the subtitle of his book is It's Not the New Brooklyn, which means we have to talk about hipsters. And you're feeling that with so many writers who kick that term around, it has become code for something else.
I think so. I think because we say things are the New Brooklyn and we talk about hipsters and comparing every city that's going through demographic changes and whatnot, that can, to me, rubs me the wrong way because I'm a young person. I'm not white, but a lot of these things are being described as code for things only white people enjoy, like craft beer. But I like craft beer, wearing a certain kind of clothing. But, you know, there's nothing that says I can't wear that kind of clothing. So why do we have to put this particular label on it? You know, it's in again, Detroit is the demographics such as they are. You open up a new restaurant, you open up a new bar, everybody who lives around that bar is going to go visit it. You know, let's get away from that hipster label.
I'm wondering if you would read us a passage from your book, because I thought this one really kind of illustrated the kind of dynamic that's going on and what could result.
Okay. This, I described a scene from The Jacksons, The American Dream, which is about the Jackson family. And they came through Detroit at Motown, obviously.
Yeah.
And there's a scene that I love in there that sort of weirdly describes what's going on in Detroit right now. There's a scene in the Jackson Family miniseries, The Jacksons, An American Dream, where a young Michael Jackson is invited to sing on stage with Motown grand diva Diana Ross. The two duet on Reach Out and Touch Somebody's Hand, Ross's first solo outing after leaving the Supremes. As a supposedly based on a true story TV movie would have you believe, Jackson stole the show from Ross, singing the second verse of the song and refusing to give back her microphone, causing them to have a friendly tug of war on stage. Jackson continued to outsing Ross on her own song, with his parents and siblings looking on from the audience. It's a strange metaphor I'm going to present here, and you kind of have to watch it to get the whole gist. But when you have a newcomer like MJ upstaging a veteran like Diana and not sharing the stage, it's reminding me of the narrative here in Detroit right now. Without taking an official census or survey, I can guarantee that there is no one in Detroit who wants things to stay the way they are. Little old women do not wake up and say, you know, I really hope they don't tear down that abandoned house that's now a dope house. No one ever says, we don't need better schools and police. And no one ever says that Detroit doesn't need more people. Depending on your figures, the city is anywhere between 60% to 80% occupied. Both figures way too small for a 139-square-mile city. No Detroiter turns their nose up to new business either. Everyone here might not have sophisticated financial acumen. I certainly don't. But people do realize the basics of what investment brings. Some may look at new businesses slowly restoring an eroding tax base, and some may have a more simplistic view of having a new place to patronize. But I can guarantee that what every Detroiter wants is a chance to be heard, and this is where that Ross Jackson metaphor comes into play. By sharing the stage and sharing the microphone, we all have a chance to express ourselves, share our fears, our doubts, our hopes, and our wishes. Sharing and listening is what can make Detroit better, on both sides. But it's better if that's done in a close setting. Maybe that's why I've been cynical and skeptical, because so much of the conversation about Detroit has been led by people I don't know or recognize. But once you sit down and talk with someone and have that real dialogue, there's absolutely nothing like it.
So I get the message, drop the preconceived notions, respect who and what was there before you showed up, and talk, listen, and dialogue. And what do you think will come out of that if we're able to do this?
I think once we're able to do this, we can sort of, you know, push Detroit to the future that we all want, I think. Having this common ground where we are filling empty space and restoring businesses and things like that, but at the same time, not alienating people. You know, it can happen on both sides where one side is suspicious of another side and whatnot. So why don't we meet on common ground so that doesn't have to happen?
Aaron Foley, his book is How to Live in Detroit Without Being a Jackass. There's going to be a release party for Aaron's book that everyone's welcome to join Thursday, December 17th at Signal Return in the Eastern Market. Aaron, it was great having you with us. Thank you so much for sharing your book and being with us on Stateside.
Thank you so much.